I'm Emma Connors, Managing Editor of The Interpreter, and I'm here today with Roger Shanahan, Research Fellow at the Lowy Institute, to talk about Neil Prakash. It's a name that's been in the headlines a lot in recent days since his arrest in Turkey. And I guess a good place to start, Roger, is, you know, tell us what we know about this man.
Well, he's from Cambodian and Indian Fijian heritage. He's from Melbourne, had some time with a gang group in Melbourne. So he's part of that kind of lower semi-criminal milieu that haven't amounted to much in normal life in Australia. So that's his background. Converted to Islam through the Al-Furqan Centre in Melbourne, which was a noted producer of radical Islamists, and fell in with that crowd and eventually moved to Syria.
And since then, he became very active on social media, actively recruiting for Islamic State?
Certainly, he's one of the, to start with, he appeared on what was in effect an English language recruiting video shot by Al-Hayat, Islamic State's English language media arm, that featured three British and three Australian Muslims with Islamic State flags and paraphernalia, telling people to come to Syria and Iraq to establish Islamic rule. He was only in the video itself goes for about 13 minutes. He was only in it for a short period of time in a non-speaking role, but it's probably the first time that he had some kind of public profile. He subsequently put out a video about his journey to become a jihadi, where he's trying to establish the reasons as to why what he is doing has given him some meaning in encouraging others to follow his path.
Is it fair to say, I mean, in terms of the commentary leading up to the arrest, there has been some speculation that he's been tracked by social media? Do we know any circumstances that actually led to the arrest?
No, we don't. That's been stuff that will probably come out in due course, I imagine, but the Turkish authority, from what we know, the Turkish authorities detained him inside Turkey after having originating from Iraq, we believe. And there are reports that the Turkish authorities did so with the assistance of information provided by Australia. We know Prakash has been very active on social media. Besides him appearing in those videos, he has also appeared on electronic chat, encouraging others to try and attack Australian targets. Newman Haidar was one of the people in particular that he praised online, that he claimed he was in contact with, indications that he has certainly been in contact with people in Australia encouraging him to attack. But we're not exactly sure about how his trail was uncovered and how they knew where to pick him up from. But you know, electronic surveillance is oftentimes one of the main reasons that people give away their locations.
And what's likely to be the next step? I mean, we know that Australia's pushing to extradite him. What will happen then?
Well, if he's extradited and the Turkish government allows him to be extradited to Australia, and I probably see no reason why they wouldn't. I think Australia's contemporary foreign fighter laws are pretty strong, and I think they would be stronger than what he would face in Turkey. So I think the Turkish government would be happy for the Australian government to put him on trial. He will be arraigned, but most likely not questioned until he gets to Australia in terms of criminal offences by the federal police, likely returned to Melbourne and then charged. One of the problems in the past for, and in the future for, foreign fighters who return to Australia and other countries is the evidentiary basis to try and prove in court with material that is open source to convince a jury. And one of the things about Neil Prakash being so active on social media is that he's got a pretty significant, very public Islamic State footprint that ties him directly to the organisation. So in terms of being able to prosecute him, you would think on the face of it there's sufficient evidence.
Now, assuming he does get extradited, tried and jailed, there were some comments made this morning by Dr. Clark Jones, who's an expert on prison radicalisation at ANU, who said managing someone like Prakash inside jail would be extremely problematic, and was saying that, you know, that he's likely to find a prison a very fertile recruiting ground. But, you know, would you agree well, what would your thoughts be on, you know, that is a disincentive for bringing him back?
Well, I don't think there should be really any disincentive to bring him back. part of the reason for bringing him back and taking him to trial is a demonstration effect that a public trial of this person who flouted Australian law and has essentially betrayed his country is brought back to his country of origin, is tried in an open court, all the evidence about what he has done is brought out into the public space, and for a whole raft of people, justice is done, and justice is seen to be done in the secular society from which he came. Certainly his management in prison is something that the authorities will have to pay attention to, and certainly somebody like that, of that kind of radical ideology, is unlikely to change overnight, if at all. But I think this is just one of the issues that the corrective services in all the states who jail these people are going to have to look at, exactly what you do with them in jail, but it should certainly not be a reason for not bringing them back or not trying them or not putting them through the normal criminal judicial processes that we have in place.
And there's also been some commentary about, you know, his background. I think, you know, one reporter described him as a lonely, lost type of guy. You know, there's almost sort of an element of pity in that. But how does that translate into how we should view what he has done in terms of recruiting for Islamic State?
Yeah, certainly my particular point of view is certainly many people who go to join the jihadis are what you would call vulnerable, but there's a difference between being vulnerable and travelling thousands of kilometres to go and kill people because you think God tells you that you're allowed to kill people. So I think there has to be an overwhelming sense of personal responsibility. It's not like somebody has just done minor criminal acts because they're vulnerable or they've had a bad upbringing. You know, vast majority of people who have that background don't go away killing people in the name of God. So we have to look at those people in that light. They are extremely dangerous. The people who try and manipulate them are more dangerous, but the people themselves, whether you're vulnerable or not, that might be a slight mitigating factor, but it's certainly no excuse, and individual responsibility means that we all have free will, and somebody has chosen to make a long journey, be asked to do it at the other end.
And now it looks like he might be making the long journey in reverse.
Yes, and I think there might be a few more of those people in the future as well.
Is that for any particular reason you say that? Or
no, it's just that as the Islamic State gets pushed and contracted, there'll be people who will, some of whom might try and come home because they're sick of it, other people who might be trying to move from one field of jihad to another field of jihad and get interdicted by the authorities along the way and get extradited back to Australia. But we've already seen about 40 Australian foreign fighters return to Australia, and you would expect more in the future.
Okay, well, I'm sure we'll talk about them in due course. Thanks very much.
My pleasure.